You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Here's McDavid with a pass and Brough scores. Inside, Hattie for Hyman. Taps it up, doesn't know where it is. Touchdown three. Where is it? Somebody blow a damn whistle.
Auston Matthews with his 70th goal. Regular season and playoffs this year.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, it's a four-guester on the Halford and Brough show today on Sportsnet 650. It begins at 6:30. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us. Four more series. Two got underway last night. Two played their game twos last night. Devastating loss for Bo Horvat and the New York Islanders. We'll talk to Wish about all that at 6:30. 7:30, Adam Vingan is going to join the program from Nashville, covering this series, filling in on the on behalf of Sportsnet.ca. We'll talk to Adam about the Pred side of things as they look to even up their series with your Vancouver Canucks. Tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Adam Vingan's going to join us at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, the man that's on the call tonight, right here on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor will join us. A reminder, pregame, postgame, and Batch calling the actual game, all here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 tonight, as the Canucks and the Preds take on for game two of their opening round series of the playoffs. And then, speaking of your Vancouver Canucks, a guy that absolutely eviscerated these same Nashville Predators back in 2011. Ryan Kesler, everybody, is going to be on the program at 8:30 this morning. Kess is in town. That's right, in Vancouver for this series. He'll be joining us at 8:30 to talk about a myriad of things, including tonight's game.
He's like, I heard the Canucks are playing the Preds. I can get into the lineup for that.
That's right.
I own these guys.
4C Ryan Kesler. He could probably still pull it off.
Kesler just hanging outside the Preds arena, just staring him down. Remember me?
Just looking
I'm
at him.
Back.
Yeah. That must be nice for a player to have like a signature playoff series. You know, like when you associate. I mean, when we talked about the last time the Canucks played the Preds in the playoffs, everyone was like, well, yeah, the Ryan Kesler series.
That was the Beast Mode Ryan Kesler series. So he's going to join us at 8:30. Batch is going to join us at 8. Adam Vingan at 7:30. Greg Wyshynski at 6:30. We have a ton to get into. A lot from the off day between games from the Canucks and Preds yesterday. All the games from last night. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. The Canucks were originally scheduled to practice yesterday between games one and two of their opening round series against the Nashville Predators, but Rick Tocchet and company called an audible on practice. They decided to make it an optional skate. Nine skaters and the two backup goalies, Archer Seelovs and Casey DeSmith, showed up. In explaining it, Tocchet said, and I quote, "I would have rather practiced today early in the series, but I could tell the guys were spent. Usually early in a series, I really believe a team should practice for 15, 20, or 30 minutes. Rick Tocchet then added, "I'm not a morning skate guy." God bless Rick Tocchet. "But I felt the guys deserve the day to rest." So there you have it. That was from Canucks pseudo practice yesterday.
So not a morning skate guy, but a rest guy.
He's not a morning skate guy.
But he is a rest guy.
He's a rest guy.
Okay. Yeah. He had one the other day. He's a body position first guy, and then you get the puck.
He understands.
He's definitely a reps guy.
He loves his reps. That's why he's a practice guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a tiring the team out kind of guy.
Right.
So, look.
You dropped a look.
Yeah, you're a look guy.
I'm a look guy.
Rick Tocchet also said that, you know, ahead of game two, he said, I think there are four or five guys that can really help us tomorrow. I thought they were just okay yesterday.
Can't be an okay guy.
So that is a nice way of saying that certain guys have to play a little bit better in game two.
What guys would that be, Jason?
Oh, you're like, I think Höglander, probably Höglander.
Who could Rick Tocchet possibly be talking about?
He also said that he didn't think the Pettersson, he thought the Pettersson line was just okay. We all know the two lines that got it done for the Canucks, right? In game one, it was the Miller line, Besser and Suter. They played unbelievably. And then the Lindholm line, which happened to have Dakota Joshua on it with Connor Garland. And those guys have really been driving the bus for the last little while for the Canucks.
Yep.
Joshua, Garland, Miller, and then whoever's with them, essentially.
Third line is now the second line. Second line is the first line. First line, maybe the third line.
Well, and sometimes those three guys were all together, Miller, Joshua, and Garland down the stretch, but they split them up for the playoffs. So, look, I, again, another look. I don't like always bringing up Pettersson, but when the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks says, there were four or five guys that were just okay in game one, and we need those guys. Of course you're going to look through the guys that were probably just okay and probably the ones he's talking about. And you have to assume that he means Elias Pettersson because, as much as the fourth line also struggled and they need to be a little bit better, they're not Elias Pettersson.
Right. Okay.
I don't want to be negative here, but we went into this series going, all right, let's look at these matchups here. The Preds do not have as much depth up front as the Canucks. Mm-hmm. So, if the Canucks can get their three lines rolling and the fourth line is okay as well, then they should win this series. But let's also not act like the Canucks played a perfect game. In game one, it was a great day at Rogers Arena. Very emotional. The crowd was amazing to the point that Rick Tocchet said, I don't even know if we should practice because I think the guys are emotionally spent.
Sure.
So they made it an optional practice. I think they had some team meetings and then they said, okay, go get ready for game two. Game one is over now. It was great that the Canucks won it. They still got a long, long way to go in this series. Mm-hmm. Case in point, last night, Toronto won game two in Boston. Toronto got dominated in game one. Toronto got embarrassed in game one by the Bruins. And so I'm getting texts from A-Dog and Laddie and Halford like, oh, you feeling pretty good about picking the Leafs? I'm like, guys, it's one game.
For the record, I did not participate.
It's one game of the series.
Still feeling pretty
good. Yeah, A-Dog's like, we still think the Leafs are going to win? I'm like,
yep.
Well, it's one game. I'm not going to change my pick. I admit that I don't care if the Leafs lose, but for the sake of my pick, I was kind of like, oh, God, was I way off here?
Sure.
But I constantly have to remind myself, this is the playoffs, and like the playoffs aren't won and lost with one game. And the Canucks have learned a lot of lessons this season and, learning lessons. Rick Tocchet is a big learning lessons guy.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the beginning of the season.
Okay.
Okay? They win game one. They blow out Edmonton at home. Everyone's like, that's amazing. Then they went to Edmonton, and they were outshot and outplayed by the Oilers, but they still won the game. And then does anyone remember what happened in game three?
Yeah, it was the Philadelphia game.
The Philadelphia game. They go out on the road after Edmonton, and they go into Philadelphia, a team where they probably thought, yeah, we're going to blow these guys out. The Flyers are rebuilding. Look at us. We're amazing. And then they got torched, basically. Like Tortorella hockey when it was still being played by the Flyers. You know, the Flyers dominated them. And the Canucks probably had, I don't know, maybe their worst game of the season. There were a few others in there.
2-0.
They were horrible.
They scored 12 goals in their first two games, and then they got shut out.
And then I remember the line that Rick Tocchet said, "Who are we to think we're anybody?" You know, these are the lessons you learn during the regular season that you hope are applied in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So this is a similar situation. You know, the Canucks win game one. Everyone's feeling great about themselves. The players are saying how awesome it felt to be playing in front of that crowd. Well, let's keep those feelings going then. Let's not get too complacent. And the guys that maybe were just okay in game one, not to name any names, but those guys need to step up now because you can't just rely on JT Miller to go beast mode every night.
Like Ryan Kessler did back in 2011. No, I get exactly what you're saying. And I think that's why Tocchet really tried to spin it as a glass half full kind of thing. It's like, look, and there's another look. We weren't our best in game. I think it's fair to say they weren't their best. There was a real smash and grab element of that victory on Sunday night, right? When you score the two fastest goals in franchise playoff history in the third period to go from 2-1 down to 3-2 up, there is a real smash and grab element that maybe you can't rely on for every single game because it only happens once in a franchise history. So what you're looking at here, can you keep, and I think Rick Tocchet kept referring to it as like being jacked up. Like mm-hmm. We got to stay jacked up. We got to get even more jacked up. And a very innate, obvious way to do that is to make sure that some of the guys that were maybe passengers or spectators in game one raise their level for game two. Because the important part you brought up there was if you have superior depth at forward, maybe on occasion you can get away with one unit not showing up or whatever because collectively you've got better depth. But the reality of it is if, let's say, Miller has an off night or he's not as jacked as he needs to be or
you know, he gets shut down by a good player like Ryan O'Reilly. Like, they have good players on the Preds.
This is where depth comes in because it allows other guys to step up in the absence of the void of the guys that did it the night before.
Like, I imagine Andrew Brunette has some ideas and some changes that he wants to make.
Well, okay,
after that Miller line. after Miller line you know, basically ran them over in game one. He's probably going to, he might even be like, you know, okay, we're going to put all our best guys on the Miller line. And, you know, Pettersson didn't really look like he was going. So we'll see if he can beat us.
Good time to transition into the Predators side of things here, because yesterday they didn't practice at all, took an entire scheduled day off, I might add. It wasn't like they had a practice and they decided to dump it. So Andrew Brunette still met with the media, as did various players. The major takeaway from the Nashville Predators following game one is that they felt they did not possess the puck nearly enough, especially in the offensive zone. Andrew Brunette was not happy with the way that they dumped the puck in or the way that they went to retrieve those dump-ins, and he said that collectively led to why they didn't have as many shots, they didn't have the chance generation that they normally had or liked, and probably a big reason why they ended up with two goals on the night and really nothing at 5-on-5 beside the one. So if you're looking at what you might expect from the Predators tonight, I would say more energy on the forecheck. I would not be surprised if you see some of those rattling them bones hits early to try and set the tone. They also know that despite not playing an ideal game in game one, they led for a good chunk of it, and they were probably hard done by because a 12-second lapse in concentration, and Andrew Brunette framed it as such. Let's make that abundantly clear. His comments after game one were more about our lapses and our breakdowns as opposed to whatever the Canucks did to us. If they can eliminate that, they're thinking exactly what Toronto thought against Boston yesterday. Who cares about game one? We win game two. We snatched home ice advantage. We're going back home with it 1-1, and we got a chance to take a 2-1 series lead. So that's exactly what Nashville will be thinking.
It's a tough balance you have to strike in the playoffs. You want to be confident and have belief in yourself, maybe even a little bit cocky, but only a little bit, because you also have to stay humble and respect your opponent. You know, as you have said, I'm sure the Preds think they can play better. those guys won a lot of games in the second half of the season. There's a reason they're in the playoffs, and it wasn't the start of their season. So they've faced tough tests during the regular season, just like the Canucks have faced tough tests during the regular season. The Preds held on and made the playoffs, right? They were in a race of sorts with others to make the playoffs, and they were the ones that got in. Let's talk about the games last night. Which one do you want to lead with? I guess we got to lead with McDavid because, man, the Oilers looked good last night against the Kings.
Zach Hyman scored a hat trick. Connor McDavid finished with 5 assists. Just another regular night at the office as the Edmonton Oilers dispatched of the Los Angeles Kings 7-4 in their first round series game at Rogers Place on Monday night. It was Hyman with the hat trick. Let's hear what it sounded like, courtesy of Sportsnet.
As here's McDavid with a pass in front of the score. Inside, happy for Hyman. First career playoff hat trick.
It was maybe the most hats I've ever seen on the ice at an NHL game. It was like a teddy bear toss, for crying out loud. It was nuts. It took a long time to get everything off the ice. It was a very, very thorough and very dominant performance from the Edmonton Oilers, who were passing down low and through the crease with impunity. They were so many tap-in goals from about 4 feet out. Several of them coming from Zach Hyman. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins also got one. And then the 5 assists from Connor McDavid. LA has to go back to the drawing board big time.
Yeah.
Because they will be done in 4 straight if those games 2, 3, and 4 look anything like game one. Because I know 7-4 makes it seem like it was reasonably close, but it wasn't. The Kings tacked on a few meaningless goals late to kind of give it a cosmetic score, but they were thoroughly, and I repeat, thoroughly outplayed by the Oilers on Monday night.
Yeah, McDavid is just, he's just an incredible player.
Yeah.
And you're watching him last night, and you're like, you're going to need something more than a 1-3-1 to stop this guy. And you're right about all the cross-ice passes, cross-crease passes. I mean, that has to be a little bit embarrassing for a Kings team that hangs its hat on being able to play defensively. They were horrible defensively.
Horrible.
But here's the thing. McDavid can make you look bad, real bad. He is, like we've said, like I think Nathan MacKinnon deserves the Hart Trophy this year, but there's no doubt in my mind that Connor McDavid is the best player in the game.
Yeah.
He's just on another level. I've never seen another player like him, and it's what makes the Edmonton Oilers so scary as a team right now. It's him, and it's him and Draisaitl being driven together, and they are good enough to drive. I think the Oilers are maybe a little bit of an imperfect team, but those two are so good that I do see them as the cup favorites right now and the team to beat in the playoffs.
But now, this is not meant to say that Nathan MacKinnon isn't a good passer, okay? I want to preface it with that. But to me, the biggest difference between McDavid and MacKinnon is the passing. McDavid's vision and his ability to deliver passes and his ability to elevate Zach Hyman into a 50-goal scorer, and he had 100 assists this year, that's the difference between them. I feel like, at times, we should just acknowledge that if he's healthy and he's playing, Connor McDavid should win every trophy because he's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
If there's a most outstanding player,
win the Norris.
Yeah, seriously, give him the Vezina. If there's a most outstanding player award and Connor McDavid is active and playing, he's the most outstanding player. I mean, that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we were at last night. Like, I don't know how many people listening right now watch that game in its entirety, but McDavid did at times pretty much whatever he wanted. He had 5 assists and he probably could have finished with 7 or 8. And the Oilers went on to win 7-4. You know what? I'm going to park what the Maple Leafs did because we've kind of already talked about it. And I want to show a little bit of love to that series that I said I was going to not pay attention to. The Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. And for those of you that carry a grudge against Bo Horvat, you won't be down with me on this one. But I genuinely felt bad for Bo yesterday. So the Islanders, despite being badly outshot, the shot attempts were 4-1. In total in favor. Like every 4 Carolina attempts, the Islanders managed to put one in the vicinity towards Frederik Andersen on goal. They were getting thoroughly outplayed, but the Islanders held a 3-0 lead yesterday in game 2 of their series against the Carolina Hurricanes. It looked as though they were on their way to even up the series 1-1, and it'd be really interesting going back to Long Island. But then the Canes decided to turn it up a notch with just over 2 minutes remaining, and they've now clawed back from 3-0 down to 3-2. The Canes pull the goalie, and it's Sebastian Aho to tie it up at 3-3. Here's what it sounded like.
Burns in the corner to Jarvis. One-timer, score!
So you remember how in game one between the Canucks and the Preds, the Canucks took 12 seconds to score that very, very pivotal goal. Well, the Carolina Hurricanes said, whatever you can do, we can do faster. 9 seconds later, right off the faceoff, Jordan Martinuk driving a stake into the hearts of the Islanders and Bo Horvat. Here's the 4-3 goal.
Drury enters the zone, plays it in deep for Carolina. Loose, score!
This was the first time in Patrick Waugh's playing or coaching career that a team that he was on blew a 3-goal lead in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, I mean, listen, okay, first of all, why do you feel bad for Horvat?
Because they had a 3-0 lead, and now they blew it, and now I feel like whatever tiny...
He was on the ice for a lot of the goals against, or one of them he looked pretty bad on.
He was on the ice for the Aho 3-3 goal.
Yeah, yeah.
It was pretty much his guy.
And he was not doing his job.
He was not doing his job. So I feel bad for him. That's why. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, and another look, we're up to 7 in the opening segment of this show now. My brief explanation on this is I understand why some people harbor a bit of resentment to him for whatever he said when he left, but I felt like he did a fine job as captain. He was thrust into a tough spot here. And when the new regime came in and decided that he wasn't going to be their guy, he was gone. I give him gratitude, and I say thank you, sir, for your time in Vancouver, and I feel bad that his team is now probably going to lose in 4 straight.
Well, that's very big of you.
Yeah, how dare you?
I was a big person.
I personally was laughing watching that game. The Carolina Hurricanes outshot the Islanders 39-12. The Islanders are not a very good team.
Do you know how many shots the Islanders blocked? 35.
There were something that the shot attempts were something like 120-30.
That was 4-1.
Carolina just owned them. I could easily see Carolina getting to the Stanley Cup final. That's not a hot take. They are a well-oiled machine when they're on, but they have to get over the hump. You know, they've won lots of first round series. They just haven't gone much further than that. The final game that I guess we can talk about just for a couple minutes here before we get to Wish was the Vegas Golden Knights winning game one down in Dallas. And Mark Stone made his presence felt very early in the game. He scores on what, his first shift?
Yep, opening goal of the series. It's none other than Mr. Spleen, Mark Stone. Do we want to hear what that one sounded like? I think we do, laddie. Here's Mark Stone, first goal in an eventual 4-3 win for the Vegas Golden Knights over the Dallas Stars in Dallas.
Stevenson off to Eichel, feeds the point. There's Hanifin. Long wrist shot. No! Score!
It actually deflected off his spleen.
He's enlarged spleen.
Guess who? Yeah, we all know.
Yeah, we knew exactly who was
the shots on goal were a story in that game as well. 30-15 for Vegas. So Vegas gets 4 goals on 15 shots. And Jake Oettinger, if you didn't pay attention to the Dallas Stars this season and you just assumed, oh, Oettinger, he's good, right? He was their number one worry heading into the playoffs.
And the crazy part was he actually went on a heater over the final 8 games of the regular season, which Dallas also, not surprisingly, in correlation, went on a heater as well. First game in, laddie, you're the goalie expert. Is it safe to say that 11 saves on 15 shots might not get it done in this series?
Yes, I would, Mike Alford.
So
it's not great.
Yeah,
not
so great. That is the only series, Jason, of the 8 in which the road team won the opening game. Home teams were 7-1. That was after Edmonton, of course, took care of Los Angeles last night as well. So be very interesting to see how that one goes, because now Dallas has got a lot of pressure to win game two.
So the other news of yesterday in the NHL is that Lindy Ruff is going back to Buffalo to coach the Sabres. Of course, those two were together all the way back in 1999.
This time.
When the Sabres lost to the Stars in the Stanley Cup Final, the controversial goal that won that for the Dallas Stars. And it's crazy that Ruff was the head coach of the Sabres the last time they went to the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
He was the head coach there for, what, 14 seasons?
And he played 10 seasons.
Yeah. There. You know, so some people will say this is a retread, bringing in Lindy Ruff. But
because
Lindy,
it is.
No, but Lindy Ruff is a much bigger thing in Buffalo, much bigger person in Buffalo than just a retread. If some other team had hired Lindy Ruff, you might be like, oh, okay, all right, fine. And the Sabres have tried everything. They've gone with, you know, the inexperienced head coach. They've gone with, like, a guy like Ralph Krueger.
Soccer coach.
You know, they brought in Phil Housley before. And, you know, he was not only had he played for the Sabres in his career, he was the hot assistant because he'd been the assistant coach with the Nashville Predators. I don't even know how much he's worked since he's been with the head coach. Didn't work at all. They had Dan Bylsma in there. That didn't work. You know, this is, for me, I actually kind of like this hire, if only because, you know, I think Lindy Ruff is a pretty capable head coach. He's seen a lot in the NHL. He has a tie to the Buffalo Sabres. And listen, you know, if it doesn't work out, the Sabres will be like, well, we're used to it. So,
yeah.
And if it does work out, it's a great story, right?
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Sedin with some speed. Kessler moves in and shoots. He scores! What a goal! Ryan Kessler has been the best player in the series. Just put Vancouver ahead 3-2.
8:32 on a Tuesday. Game day Tuesday. Get fired up, everybody. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Ryan Kessler, who you just heard in that clip, 13 years ago, ripping the hearts out of Nashville. And very fittingly, the Canucks are now playing the Nashville Predators tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Pre-game, post-game, actual game, all right here on Sportsnet 650. As I mentioned, we are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com. Today, game two of this first round series goes tonight. We're very excited. The fans are very excited. Very excited to have our next guest on the program. Former Canuck Ryan Kessler joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Well, we're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. So, for the listeners that don't know, you're back in Vancouver. You're here now. What's it like being back in Vancouver, not just being back in the city and everything, but at a time where the Canucks are finally got playoff hockey back in the city, first time in 9 years?
Yeah, it's awesome. I got in late last night and waking up, you can, you know, even last night I brought my son with me and he's like, there's people still in the streets. I'm like, just wait till tomorrow. He doesn't remember much from my time with Vancouver other than maybe playing mini sticks in the locker room. But the chance for him to see the atmosphere and everything that goes into playoff hockey, and he can kind of not relive, but kind of see what the best years of my career and the atmosphere looked like inside that building is going to be something special for me to see and for him to see.
I suppose it's a bit of a double-edged sword playing in a city like Vancouver that takes its hockey so seriously. Were there ever times where you were like, I wish I was somewhere else, but also, yeah, but like, imagine what it would be like to play somewhere else that doesn't care about hockey as much as they do in Vancouver.
Yeah. I would say to your first point, do I wish I was somewhere else? When you're in it and you're successful, it's great. When when you're not and you're struggling and you're having a hard time trying to find your game, you know, you got to be mentally strong because, you know, it is everywhere. You know, even turn on TV last night, all there is hockey. But in America, you can barely find hockey on the TV. So I loved my time here, and it was a great time in my career, and we were successful. And to be able to play in a Canadian city, I think every player should do it once, at least. There's nothing compared to it, and especially during playoff time. You know, I was watching the Canucks game the other night, and you know, just hearing that national anthem still gives me chills. And seeing them go across the blue line, and seeing all the you know, JT Miller's face standing on the blue line. You know, you know exactly how they're feeling, and you know, to be honest, it might actually get them too pumped up for the game, and. I could run through a wall after that national anthem, that's for sure.
You bring up a great point there, is that when Jason talked about double-edged swords, there is a double-edged sword to the excitement because you've got to embrace it and enjoy it and appreciate it, but you also have to deal with it. Like, you have to handle that amount of energy and not kind of like lose your mind. What advice would you give to the guys that are now going to go, some of them for just the second time in their careers, between how do you handle and embrace it and appreciate it, but also deal with it?
Well, I think once you get on the ice, you do, you know, the fans do bring that energy, right? But you can't play out of your game. And I think that's where the veterans come in, right? They steer the ship the right way and really keep things even keel. But saying that, playoff hockey is a different animal. And, you know, I'm sure all the boys are starting to realize that, or at least they realized that yesterday when they woke up, probably more sore than they've ever been after a hockey game because of how physical it is and how you literally leave everything out there every shift. But saying that, everybody plays banged up. I don't know what his slogan is, but it is true. You got to embrace the pain. You got to enjoy it. You got to go out and you got to strive for it and wear it as a badge of honor almost. And if they do that, they'll be just fine.
You played 101 games in the playoffs, including a few deep runs with the Canucks and the Ducks. When you've got a series lead, even if it's just 1-0, how difficult is it to maintain that sense of desperation when you're ahead like the Canucks are right now?
Well, I think the message in that room is going to be we have to defend home ice because they get one and they did their job. And that's what Nashville's saying over there is all we came in here for was one. If we got two, great. But if we get one, we're going back to home ice with an advantage. So I'd say, you know, the Canucks found their game early or later in the first game, and if they just come out with that same urgency they did in the third period, they'll be just fine.
We're speaking to former Canuck Ryan Kessler here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Ryan, when the Canucks booked this playoff appearance and we knew that it was going to be Nashville. The first thing, like both Bruff and I said, we're like, oh, it's like, you know, remember the Kessler series. That's actually how that 2011 series is referred to. And it's been referred to in a couple times as people have talked about it. In that series, you had 11 points in 6 games. And I remember Barry Trotz in the aftermath said, you know, Kessler was the difference in the series. Be honest with me, was there a point in that series where you were going and you were cooking and you knew, like, they're going to have a hard time stopping me? Did your confidence level reach that point because you were basically a 2-point a game guy in the 6 games?
Yeah, I think my confidence level in that series, I don't think I've ever touched it again in my career. I knew if I stepped on the ice, you know, we were going to make something happen. And I knew if I had a chance to shoot, you know, I most likely it was going in. And, confidence is a funny thing, and you know, I think during that cup run we had a lot of different guys step up, and you know, we had guys step up in the Chicago series, and then you know, the Nashville series, and you look at San Jose, you know, how well Hank, Danny, and Burr played and how close that series was. And then we were just too banged up to bring it home. But yeah, back to your point, my confidence level was unreal. I can't really explain it into words. But the ability to be a difference, because every player wants to be a difference in a series, right? But to have that, you know what, I'm going to be the difference is a different mindset.
Is that a mental thing or a physical thing? Like, physically, did you just feel like you were skating unbelievably and you were going to win every battle, or was it more a mental thing?
I think it's both. I think physically you got to feel good, and when you physically feel good, mentally, you know, things start to come around confidence-wise. And that's what happened with me. You know, I felt like I was able to play more offensive that series than the first series, going against Taves and Kane and all them. And I could kind of not cheat, but anticipate a little more on the offensive side. And as soon as Erhoff gave me that one in the crease on the power play, it was like, all right, here we go. And it just kind of snowballed from there, and I continued the momentum.
When you think back to your time in Vancouver, how often do you think about just the good times you had with your teammates, as opposed to the actual games being played on the ice?
Oh, all the time. We had such a good group of guys. You know, the guys I played with the most would be, you know, Hank, Danny, Bird, Juice, the Sedins, Edler. And then we brought in guys like Higgins and Malhotra and Raffy and, you know, Hamus and Keith Ballard and Christian Erhoff. Like, we had such a tight-knit group. And, you know, having Louie and Jason Garrison, all those names just bring back such good memories.
How much did that help when things, I don't want to say weren't going well, but when you were facing pressure, when you were facing big games, when there might have been some criticism of the team, how much did it help to have a tight room? Because we've been talking about, you know, the Canucks in their evolution in the last few years, and how, you know, Rick Tocchet has really leaned on the leadership group. And he actually said when he came in, he said, yeah, I think it's a bit of a quiet group, so we need to change that a little bit. It just seems like there, I'm not saying like there were issues in the room. It just seems like we hadn't heard until more this year. We hadn't seen them having as much fun with each other as you guys seem to have.
Well, winning's fun. And I think if you have a group that cares about winning and you're not successful, it's not fun to go to the rink. To be honest, our 2011 group was quiet too. You know, we brought in some leadership and, you know, Manny coming in, but the leadership core, we were never rah-rah guys. We, you know, when Hank said something in the room, people listened, but, you know, we knew what we had to do each and every night, and we'd go out and do it. And I think you need guys to buy into their roles. I think you need guys to give up their body, especially on the PK. You know, you need a good power play, which they have. And you need good goaltending, and they have one of the best in the game. So I'm ready for a deep run here, and hopefully this isn't my last time back here.
We're speaking to former Canuck Ryan Kessler here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned that you're back in the city and you're back in town. The way that you left Vancouver, let's be frank, like a lot of people, it left a bad taste in their mouth. Now, if you were to, because there's people listening, tens of people listening right now to the Halford and Brough Show. If you were able to just tell the people either something that they got wrong or they didn't know, or even that you just wanted them to know about how you left Vancouver, what would that message be?
You know, I think when you're young, you make mistakes. Looking back on it, you know, I really wanted that cup, and I felt like our time was over in Vancouver, and You know, there was some things that happened that kind of pushed me out. But saying that, I wish I could do it over again, because nothing compares to my time in the city. And you don't know what you have until it's gone. And, you know, my son was born here. My family was growing up here, and the people you leave are the people you miss the most. And, you know, I just wish I could do it over again.
What would you do differently? Not to dig into this too much, but, you know, I think people are interested in this stuff.
You know, it's a tough question. What would I do differently? In the time, I'm so competitive, and I wanted to win that Stanley Cup so bad. You know, you get a taste, and it's right there, and you lose in a game seven, and then the next year you get back, and you get back in the playoffs and get swept. You know, it feels so far away, and I just thought a change of scenery was going to be good for me. And I'm not saying that it wasn't, but it never gave me a chance again. And looking back on it, you know, you leave people that and teammates and friends that, you know, you wish you had more time with them now, that's all.
Well, Ryan, I want to say this on behalf of Jason, myself, everyone listening, the guys behind the booth doing the producing. I'm really glad that you're going to get to experience this, and I'm really, really glad that you and your son are going to get to experience this together. It's very cool. You know it better than anyone what it's like to be in that building. So thank you very much for doing this. Enjoy tonight, and hopefully this will be a long playoff run for you and your son to enjoy.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, too. That's Ryan Kessler, former Vancouver Canuck here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So Ryan Kessler's in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
He's here with his kid. He's going to be at the game tonight. It could be a very cool, special evening, as if it wasn't going to be already at Rogers Arena.
I think we need to talk about the question you asked him and his response to that. I mean, that is some regret that he's expressing there.
Yep. And I've heard other not to like minimize what he said, but I've heard in other interviews him have that same sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he loves the way that his time ended in Vancouver and how the legacy was altered.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy that, remember, we're talking about the Nashville series. What was the first thing we said? Hey, they played them in 2011. That was the Kessler series. There's not a lot of guys in Vancouver Canucks lore that have a series mm-hmm. that they're that identified with.
See, I never blamed him for looking at the state of the Canucks and going, I've got a better chance of winning a cup elsewhere. Now, I admired Kevin Bieksa, I suppose, for his attitude, which was basically, and I think he was quoted as saying this, you know, that if the ship's going down, I'm going down with it. And ultimately, the Canucks were the ones that went to Bieksa and said, you know, like, we need to get some assets for you.
But you're missing the two key foils in this,
mm-hmm.
and that's Daniel and Henrik Sedin, as they were Canucks until the bitter end, right?
Yeah.
That's not fair to Kessler.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always be beholden to other people. Like, people make their own choices and people make their own decisions, and I get what you're saying. He made a choice because he wanted to go win a cup.
Well, Brandon in Vancouver, I think, gets it. He texts in, he says, sounds like it's the friendships and relationships he misses most. And that's what it sounds like to me. Like he said, like, I didn't know what I had until it was gone. And then, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he goes down to Anaheim, and they had some good teams, and they played some really hard series, and you know, nearly made
the
Stanley Cup final. You know,
that
series they played against the Chicago Blackhawks in, I guess it was 2014, was one of the all-timers. Now, unfortunately for Kessler, he was on the losing end of it again. And maybe on the runs with Anaheim, it was kind of like, this just isn't the same. Like, this isn't the same as in Vancouver, where I had all these friends and relationships, and the city was like wildly into it. This is the Anaheim.
Orange County.
Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, why I asked him about the Nashville series, and my question for those that missed it was pretty much like, did you go out there being like, no one's going to stop me? That's what I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I framed it. And that's basically what he said. So it's also part and parcel with the emotional connection and the friends and everything. But also, you were the man. You were playing the best hockey of your career. You were winning a Selke. You were scoring 40 goals. You were a key driver on one of the best teams in the NHL. I mean, that's got to pull out the heartstrings too. Like, when you look back, you're like, where were the best years of my professional career? Not your life. Because there are life moments that aren't about, you know, what you've accomplished, for lack of a better term, right? Your professional career, a lot of people take that as a source of pride. A lot of people, it's their identity, right? Now, I'm not saying that's the situation here, but think about it. Think about the perfect storm that was 2011 for him. You had an elite team playing in a frenzied market that was starved, starved for a Stanley Cup. And you were a guy that, and again, without hyperbole, like single-handedly won a series. That is some stuff that's going to, like, I'm not surprised why Ryan Kessler was like, you know, I miss it here. This was the place where my family grew up and my son was born and, you know, he had his best times.
I also got his desire to win a cup because I think it probably went beyond losing game 7 in the Stanley Cup final. There was another big game that Ryan Kessler was a part of in 2010 at the same arena, and that was the gold medal game in the Olympics, which he was on the losing side of. So you take those two losses, and then you combine that with the state of the Canucks, which was looking like a team that was older, more banged up. They lost a few key pieces, and they didn't have much in the pipeline. You know, he wasn't wrong to think that there were going to be some tough times in it for the Vancouver Canucks. And he, you know, people might say, well, maybe if he stuck around, it would have been different. Like, I don't think so. I don't think it would have been different. I think time was just up in that cycle for the Canucks and they were no longer a cup contender. But, you know, it really does sound like it was more on the personal side as opposed to the professional side. Like, maybe he's like, wow, I chased the Stanley Cup and I let the Stanley Cup be everything that I thought about, right? Like, where am I going to go where I can win a cup? And maybe, you know, sometimes when you like, we all get take things for granted, right? Like, we've got this person in our life or we've got this relationship in our life. And, you know, I take that for granted. I want more. I want more. I want more. And sometimes when you go and get that more or you chase that more, you lose what you have and you're like, wait a minute. I think I just lost this trade.
Yeah. And that's, I think, maybe what was going on there in that phone call. It was very cool for Ryan Kessler to join the program. And again, game 2, Canucks Preds tonight. Ryan Kessler, famous for the 2011 performance against the Preds here in Vancouver. Could be a very cool night at Rogers Arena. I guarantee you it'll be a real cool night at Rogers Arena because playoff hockey is back. Game 2 this evening. A reminder, pregame, postgame, and the actual game. It's all right here on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.